beyond good, beyond evil, beyond your wildest imagination.
Welcome to Tooncast Beyond. This is episode 79, brought to you by the Geekcast Radio Network. I am one of your hosts, TF2 and Mike, and joining me today is Eduardo. Hello, sir.
Hello.
And we are here to continue our X-Men the Animated Series, X-Men 92 coverage of the classic Marvel cartoon, Fox Kids cartoon from the 90s. Since this episode was originally going to be recorded before and after, we had an interview with Eric and Julia Leewald. Eric wrote previously on X-Men, the new hit book all about behind the scenes of X-Men, the animated series. Sadly, Wolverine got mad and he berserkered the audio for that interview, so we will have to redo that. This was a little while ago. I'm in the motions of prepping my wedding and everything else, so I haven't had time to actually sit down and actually read previously on X-Men, but I have a review copy. The book is now out. I do want to get an actual physical copy. Hint, hint, if anyone wants to get it for me for Christmas this year, buy it through Jacobs Brown Books. I will put a link in the show notes. You actually have the book in your hands at this point.
Yes, I do.
Yes, you do.
Physically in my hands, and it even includes Mr. Leewald's autograph.
Awesome.
And a bookmark, so, you know,
sweet.
If anything, this is a little PSA, kids. If you have a chance to buy directly from the publisher, do it.
Mm-hmm.
Do it. Okay, do it. There's a good chance you will find extra goodies.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, and it's not about as cool as the autograph is, it's awesome that the bookmarks are awesome. I do have to say, God bless you, Mr. Leewald. Why? Because this book has actually helped us, the two of us, out. Because what's inside there? The actual order for seasons 3 through 5. So now we know the exact order. When we were about to record this, having this book, I'm like, oh, God bless you. Oh, now I know what to focus on. Oh, thank you, God. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Leewald. Thank you so much.
Yep. And if anyone wants to connect with Eric Leewald, you can follow at XMenTAS on Twitter, or you can head on over to XMenTAS.com. Because this is the 25th anniversary year of X-Men, the animated series. 25 years ago today is when this landmark series hit, along with the other landmark series. You know, that one with that guy who, you know, that nut from Gotham City. So, yeah. Okay.
His name was Guano Man, right?
Yeah, something about Guano. I think Ace Ventura kind of infected that a little bit. All right, so we are going to get to Mr. Optimus Solo for Just the Facts, and we're going to come back and talk about a little bit about previously on X-Men and kind of give you guys a behind-the-scenes look if you have not really read the book yet. We're going to be talking about episode order because we've already done the history with the show, our history with the show type of stuff. So let Kevin tell you all about X-Men, the animated series, season 4. We'll be back after this.
What's the matter? Teacher's pet got cold feet. Anytime.
Smitty boy.
Hey gang, it's Optimus Solo, and I'm here to give you just the facts on X-Men the Animated Series. X-Men the Animated Series is an American animated television series which debuted in 1992 and ran to 1997, lasting 5 seasons and airing 76 episodes. It aired on the Fox Network as part of its Fox Kids Saturday morning lineup. This was Marvel Comics' second attempt at an animated X-Men TV series, following the pilot X-Men Pride of the X-Men, which was not picked up. Saban Entertainment was contracted to produce the show and hired a small studio, Graz Entertainment, to produce the episodes as it did not have the sufficient staff at the time to handle production in-house. Graz employed the creative staff, wrote and designed each episode, and even drew the storyboards. The voice work was done using Canadian studios, and the animation was done by the South Korean studio, Acom. The plot was loosely adapted from famous storylines and events in the X-Men comics, such as the Dark Phoenix Saga, Days of Future Past, the Phalanx Covenant, and the Legacy Virus. The show features a team lineup similar to that of the early 1990s X-Men comic books. The lineup largely resembles that of Cyclops' Blue Team, established in the early issues of the second X-Men comic series. The series' first 13 episodes were notable for being possibly the first time ever that an American animated series had a full season of episodes flow one into the next, i.e. a continuity-based show, something the series' producers fought heavily for. However, starting with season 3, most episodes were shown in random order. Each episode was assigned 2 different numbers internally. One is for script order, which indicates the number assigned by the production company. The other is the production order, which are the official episode numbers assigned by Fox Children's Network, indicating the order that they actually received the episodes from the production company. These both vary from the order in which the series actually aired, especially after season 3. So we have 3 different sets of orders in which these episodes could be organized. According to series writer Stephen Melching, the script order is the best guide in terms of overall series continuity, as this is how the stories were originally envisioned to flow together. The X-Men animated show was the longest-running Marvel Comics animated series for 18 years. It lasted 6 years during its 5-season run, which was the record until it was eventually beaten by The Ultimate Spider-Man when its 77th episode aired on October 17, 2015. So from 96 all the way until 2015, X-Men was the longest running Marvel Comics animated series. The series, though, was canceled after the episode Graduation Day, which aired on September 20th, 1997. And now for some toon trivia. Broadcast standards and practices had asked the writers to change the name of the villain Fabian Cortez to something non-Hispanic, because there are no prominent members of the X-Men to provide balance for this type of negative character. Eric Luold said that was a big deal to the writers, since that's the character's name in the comics, and pointed out that Spanish conquistador Cortez was not a well-liked man. The X-Men roster also did not change much throughout the series. For the second season, plans were made to have Archangel be added to the team, but ultimately those plans were scrapped, which left the roster basically unchanged for the better part of the entire series. Now, today's episode specifically focuses on Season 4. Season 4 is where it can be somewhat confusing to watch, depending on what order you see the episodes. Season 4 aired for 17 episodes, starting September 9, 1995, and going through May 4, 1996. As mentioned during Season 3, some of the Season 4 episodes were aired during Season 3 to compensate for other episodes that were pushed back and away from Season 3. Around episode 55, Larry Houston, director, was also more or less transitioned off of the show and began to be less involved in the show and more involved with working on the second season of the Fantastic Four series from 1994. Season 4 also includes a few multi-part episodes. We have One Man's Worth, the two-parter, Proteus, another two-parter, Sanctuary, the final two-parter, and then Beyond Good and Evil, a four-part episode. Also interesting to note, Chris Potter, the original voice of Gambit, left the series in 1996. Tony Daniels took over for the voice of Gambit until the series ends. So that's just the facts for today, and now let's toss it over to TFG1 Mike and company as they discuss in detail Season 4 of X-Men the Animated Series.
Previously on X-Men.
All right, folks, we are back. Thank you so much, Mr. Just the Facts, Optimus Solo, for giving us just the facts on X-Men the Animated Series Season 4. And we've got more facts for you here, folks, because as we said, we're going to actually run down the Season 4 episode order in its proper order, I guess you could say, the defining order.
Well, you know what? I'm going to take a page out of TV, out of the website TVTropes.com. We're just calling this Word of God.
Yes.
This is Word of God. This is how, this is from the producer himself. So you know what? Anybody right now feels like arguing, my message to you is go to hell, okay? Because I'm going to trust Eric Lewald, okay? He worked on the damn show.
He was the showrunner. I mean, come on. Yeah.
I don't care. I don't care. This is the showrunner talking here, okay? All right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe a couple of episodes are okay in the order you want, but you know what? This is Eric Lewald.
Yes.
This is his own words, so yes. Yeah.
So, run us down the list, sir, of what is in Season 4. We start with One Man's Worth, the two-parter.
Yep, we got One Man's Worth. Then we got another two-parter, which is Proteus 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Then we have Family Ties with Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch.
Yep.
Then we got Bloodlines, where, you know, we have Mystique doing a little... Mystique reunion.
Yeah, right? Mystique and Nightcrawler and Rogue and all that.
And Sabretooth, yep. Let's see. Then we got Lotus and the Steel, which is Wolverine in Japan with Jubilee tagging along, because why not? Let's see. Then we got a little bit of heartbreak because we got Weapon X Lies in Videotape.
I love that they took that from, obviously, Sex Lies in Videotape, but, love that.
Yep. Then, let's see, then we have Yourself a Morlock Little Christmas.
The best Christmas holiday ever! It's Christmas with the Morlocks.
And Leech almost dying, because, you know, we have to do some near trauma fuel for the holidays.
Leech dying, no!
Yep. Then, let's see, then we finish things off with Beyond Good and Evil, parts 1 through 4.
Oh my god, yes. Absolutely. Like, this... Oh. So awesome. So very, very awesome. Yes. So that is the season order here. That's gonna lead us into the season breakdown of here, what's the format? The highlights and lowlights of the season, favorite story arcs, character moments, favorite episodes, pacing of the season, favorite characters, main, recurring, and guest. For me, with season 4, as I had said in a previous episode, I watched all of it on Hulu, so the Hulu order is way out of order. They have Beyond Good and Evil, like, as episode 8 of season, like, it's so far gone, folks. But anyway, we're going to talk about it in the order that it was supposed to be watched. One Man's Worth, I always remember the whole thing of the alternate timeline and Wolverine and Storm being a married couple, and like, I always remembered that, but I never remembered which episode it was until I watched this back. And I'm like, oh yeah, One Man's Worth, that's right, it's Bishop and Shard, his sister, and,
yep.
And what I love about, I'll let you go in a minute, what I love about Previously on X-Men, written by Eric Lewald, under the season episode breakdown things, he lists what episode numbers they should be. And he lists the air dates and all of that. Next to the air dates, he goes, out of order DVD numbers 46. And like, he basically calls out Disney and says, he doesn't say the F word, but I'm going to, because I can. You fuckers got it wrong. Like, no, this is very much XXX. No, no, no. So wrong. Yeah. One Man's Worth. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Well, I know that One Man's Worth, like, right around the time, we had the whole Age of Apocalypse thing, which, yeah, similar thing. We have Xavier dying before he's supposed to, and then that just screwing up the world. You know, interesting that we have that all condensed into a two-parter. There's a part of me that would have loved to have a you know, maybe a couple of more parts so we can explore the Crapsack world. My favorite, of course, is a cameo by the Crapsack World Avengers.
Yep.
Would have loved to get some more background on who they are, and, you know, are they actually drinking the Kool-Aid, or is there kind of something that forces them to work for this anti-mutant government? Like, what the I'd love to know what the deal is. I love the little tiny things there. Like, we see Jean Grey as a nurse, and we get
nurse.
Yeah, we do get hints that Scott is a medic. So, you know, it's. I would be curious to see, like, again, just more of the world. I think one of the most jarring images, though, is a one-armed Gambit.
Yeah,
it's like holy crap! Some bad shit went down. You know, people they took hits.
Oh yeah.
Which kind of makes me wonder: is there anybody that we didn't see, that the reason we're not seeing them is because they're pushing up daisies?
Yep. Absolutely. What I love about One Man's Worth is the whole thing of the fact that the entire existence of humankind is rested on young Charles Xavier's shoulders. Because this is the one where... Yeah, this is Fitzroy and Nimrod, right?
Yeah. Fitzroy!
Yep.
Yeah, Trevor Fitzroy, that the Sentinels are like, okay, tell you what, how about you can you can work for us and we won't kill you. Oh, but we're gonna send this little shit. What's his name? Bantam. You know, we're gonna send this other little mutant to watch over you. You know, make sure that you're playing by the rules. And then Nimrod shows up and it's like, oh shit, Nimrod.
Yeah, I love Eric's final note here in the book about this episode before we move on to the next one. One obscure personal note, he says. I inserted a line of dialogue in Logan's fight with Nimrod. It is taken from a tough old Western movie that I saw on TV as a child that stayed with me. It was said by a villain with a knife, though I can't clearly remember 55 years later. Wolverine whips out his claws, straddles Nimrod, and says... Let's see what you had for breakfast. There's a scene matching this in the Dalton Trumbo written movie Cowboy, so that could be the source. The line makes absolutely no sense when spoken as Logan does to a robot. But for me it remains unsettling and evocative. Proteus two-parter was strange at first, and then I remembered, oh, that's right, that's what this is. This was potential Charles and Moira have a child, but obviously it wasn't Professor X and Moira Taggart.
Yeah, it was Joseph McTaggart.
Yep.
Which, by the way, Joseph and Proteus should be thanking their lucky stars that this was the television adaptation. Because, yeah, in the actual comics, a little bit of a spoiler alert, Proteus and Joseph die.
Oh, jeez.
In fact, actually, everybody Proteus possesses dies.
Oof.
You know, that's the thing. Proteus is basically pure energy. He possesses bodies and burns them out. So, yeah, anybody who got... So, really, Banshee should have been dead.
Everybody should have been dead.
Everybody that he possessed should have died. But, yeah, since I guess this was Saturday morning and, you know, we... And plus, it's like, poor Moira, you know, we can't just, you know, I give her a break, you know. Mm-hmm. She lost her kid in the comics, you know. Let's give her a happy ending here. So it's like, it is weird. I think the weirdest thing is Wolverine disintegrating.
Yeah,
just when Proteus just goes insane with reality, and you know, you have Wolverine turning into like a puddle or something, and it's just, yep. It was like, wow, that's holy cow, that's unsettling.
Yep. Absolutely. And this is all... And then this is an episode that really... Okay. I know my dad loves me and all that and everything else, but as, you know, I think I've said before on this show or other shows that I've done in the last almost 10 years, we've not exactly had the closest relationship over the years. I mean, I know deep down he loves me. He'll do anything he can for me and all of that, you know, and everything else. And since my mom passed 2 years ago, he's not necessarily been a constant in my life, but he's, like, we've actually been talking. We've been, you know, sharing stuff and yada, yada, yada and everything else. So this whole Proteus thing about, you know, a father's affection or lack thereof in Kevin's yeah. case here in the episode, yeah. I'm just, that's a really hitting home kind of topic for me. Because while my dad was around when I was a kid, he, like, I saw him, like, once a week. And I know that's a lot, considering most kids don't see, like, most kids that end up having, you know, dads that aren't in the picture don't see them that even that much or less than that. Still, it's very, very cool, very interesting. Family ties. This is Rogue. This is
This is the episode with Michael J. Fox guest starring.
Is it really?
No, I'm just trying to make a joke because
family. You're so funny.
Well, I was going to say Michael Gross, but I thought I'd go with, like, the more recognizable name.
Now, see, if you would have said, this is the episode that stars Alex P. Keaton, I would have gotten it right away. I wasn't like, family. Oh, right, family ties. That's right. Yes. So this is...
Not going to make it easy for you like that.
So this is the one with Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, Magneto's children.
They had a great guest villain from outside the X universe with High Evolutionary. I like the way he was done here, as opposed to how he showed up in Spider-Man Unlimited.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I like his presentation here. I love it when the X-Men cartoon would bring out villains and stuff that were, like, outside the X universe. And I'm not just talking a quick cameo of, like, hey kids, look, there's Spider-Man. It's like, hey, look, this person's actually interacting with the X-Men.
Yep. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Hey, I like that we had Scarlet Witch in her kind of classic look.
Yep.
Because I know around the same time we had the Iron Man cartoon, and she was in her Force Works outfit. So it's cool to have, like, the classic Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. I'm pretty sure that Eric and the rest of the team, Larry Houston and all those guys, I'm pretty sure they went with more classic designs than whatever the current modern ones at the time were in the comics.
That said, though, it would have been kind of cool if this had come out a little closer to the Kurt Busiek, George Perez Avengers run, because then maybe we would have had Scarlet Witch in her gypsy outfit.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, come on. That is one awesome looking outfit. It is, yeah. Impossible to do in live action, but oof.
Like, animation, in the comics, it could have worked. Yeah,
it could have worked. It could have worked, and there could have been a lot of young men, you know, watching this episode and going, "Wow, okay, I have a crush now."
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Up next is Bloodlines. This is the episode. This and Family Ties, I kind of get confused. This is the episode with Nightcrawler and Rogue and Mystique and the whole family thing. This also actually has two mutant families. It has Nightcrawler, Rogue, and Mystique, along with Sabretooth and his horrible, horrible son, Graydon Creed.
Yeah, which ties in because Graydon's, Sabretooth is his dad, and then, you know, he gets pulled into the whole Mystique thing, so get, like, a demented family reunion, which, by the way, I don't know about you, but end of the episode, when Graydon Creed gets dumped at his dad's house, I'm like, you dead.
I'm like,
you so dead. You're dead, buddy.
You know what this reminds me of? And I'm so sorry to everybody, because I know not everyone is going to be a fan of this.
Uh-oh. Is he going to go there?
Oh, you have no idea. I don't even think you could predict where I'm going to go with this. So,
okay, go.
The whole thing with Graydon Creed and Victor Creed and the whole Sabretooth and his son thing and leaving him at the end of the episode, you just know what's going to happen, even though we don't see it. And there's Eric basically says in here in the end, Graydon Creed's searing hatred for mutants of being united and his blood relation to them creates the most terrifying X-Men TAS ending scene ever. He is given over to Sabretooth, his quote-unquote daddy, to be dealt with. We don't see the result, but it is no way soft-pedaled. It appears Sabretooth is going to tear him apart. This is a stark contrast to the moment earlier when Nightcrawler, an abandoned child, forgives his guilt-stricken mother. So I love the juxtaposition of the two different family dynamics here. But the whole Graydon Creed thing reminds me of the Garth Brooks song, The Night I Called the Old Man Out.
Oh, jeez.
Which we'll play right here.
Wow.
Dining room fell silent. I can't believe what I just said. I just told my daddy's full of it, and I watched his face turn red. Well, and I should have said I'm sorry, but I matched him shout for shout. And I can still hear that screen door slamming the night I called him out. He said, son, it's gonna hurt me more than it hurts you. But somehow I couldn't help but have my doubts. Cause I'd seen my older brothers crawl back in the house each time they called the old man out. Fist to fist and eye to eye, standing toe to toe, he would have let me walk away, but I just would not let it go. Years of my frustration had led me to this night. Now he'll pay for all the times that he's been around. He said, son, it's gonna hurt me more than it hurts you. But somehow I couldn't help but have my doubts. Cause I'd seen my older brothers crawl back in the house each time they called the old man out. It was over in a minute, and that's when I realized the blood came from my mouth and nose, but the tears came from his eyes. And in memory of that fateful night, I know the greatest pain was his. And I just pray someday I'm half the man he is. He said, son, it's gonna hurt me more than it hurts you. But somehow I couldn't help but have my doubts. Cause I've seen my older brothers crawl back house each time they call the old man out. Just like my older brothers, I crawl back in the house the night I call the old man out.
And up next, after that, song from...
And by the way, that was... Actually, you went someplace I was not expecting.
I told you you weren't going to be able to... I told you.
I got to admit, there was a part of me that was like, oh, sweet God, don't do a deliverance thing.
No.
Okay.
Well, no deliverance here.
No. Deliverance. Okay, okay, there you go. Thank. No, sorry no. I doubted you, man. Sorry I doubted.
Yeah, I've been on a super, early Garth career kick because a buddy of mine is had bought the when Garth was still at Ghost Tunes before Ghost Tunes went down. Garth had this subscription deal or package deal. If you bought, like, for $30, you could get all of his albums and whatever new albums he started. Like, he put Man and Machine. He's got like two new albums in the last 4.5 years. So you could get all of his entire catalog of studio albums for $30 in digital form. So my buddy is sending these to me every now and then, because Garth Brooks isn't on iTunes. Garth Brooks is barely on Spotify. Garth Brooks is on Amazon Music. Well, I'm not paying for Amazon Music. Yada, yada, yada. So I've been on a huge 90s Garth kick recently. And yeah, as soon as I read this part in the book about the two different family, I'm like, yeah, this is pretty much night I called the old man out. So, all right, up next is Lotus and the Steel, and this it's basically Wolverine. This is where Wolverine came from.
Yeah,
and what I mean by that, folks, is the film Wolverine.
Well,
because he went back to Japan, he was fighting Silver Samurai in the movie. Yep. And this is the Silver Samurai episode.
Yeah, although Silver Samurai is leading a biker gang. I'm kind of like, But then again, I suppose, you know, there's only so much you can do on Saturday mornings. And it's like they already, Eric already, I thought it was awesome that he had an episode with Nightcrawler that was like heavy on the religion.
Yeah.
So I guess going into the whole, you know, honor system, you know, Japanese philosophy thing may have been a little, you know, it's like, okay, we got away with this. Let's take him to Japan, but, you know, but still, Silver Samurai, again, he's kind of been connected to the X universe, but he started out outside of it, like as a Daredevil villain, but still great, cool character.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, truth be told, I think I like him better in better here in Lotus and Steel than I do in the Wolverine.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the Wolverine was just, it was like, okay, you're trying, but you're not there. You're not there.
So, yeah, absolutely awesome. I thought this was a nice little thing for, because Wolverine, I think, ever since Dark Phoenix, is kind of, he hasn't been lost, but we have seen and we will see episodes with him.
Yeah.
Where, you know, he's kind of trying to figure his own shit out, and this is kind of one of them. Mm-hmm. I understand, and I don't have a problem with it, just looking at what Eric says about this episode, but Wolverine and Jubilee. Yes, they are big brother, little sister type of relationship, but oh my god, Jubilee is so even as a 13, 14, 15 year old, I thought Jubilee was the annoyingest character ever in the 90s. Mm. Like, she to me in 1995 was worse than Urkel.
Ow!
Yeah.
Ow! Ow, ow. That's low, man. Ow, ow. Ow, dude, man. Come on, Geneva Convention here, okay? You went a little too far, man. The UN peacekeepers are like on you going, no, dude, don't do that.
The sad thing is that I am... this happened a while ago. Hopefully it stays on here for a length of time that is not more than 10 seconds. over on Hulu, they have released something called Thank God It's Hulu instead of Thank God It's Friday. So TGIF. So they've got Hanging with Mr. Cooper. They got Boy Meets World. They got Step by Step. I am up to the point of watching season 1, episode 8 of Family Matters. I'm only 8 episodes into this series, and the first 7, like, very rarely feature Steve Urkel. Like, everyone remembers that show because of him. The thing of it is that show was more about the Winslow family than it was. It turned into being about him because of the popularity. But that first season, so far, he's just now beginning to become more of a part of the cast. But those first 7 episodes was all about, you know, Officer Al Powell and his wife and kids and everything else. So
yeah,
Jubilee, much worse than Urkel. At the time, in 1995, when I was 15 years old, yeah, she was more annoying than, did I do that?
So, well, at least she has superpowers. At least she can, like, I don't know.
She can throw glitter. She throws glitter. And they don't, do they ever, like, I'm going to have to go back and read through the whole book and everything else, because I have yet to do so, but I hope previously on X-Men actually talks about the character and their powers, because, like, there's no real, like, to my knowledge in the show, there was no real explanation of, other than she makes fireworks. Like, that's really the explanation I have for Jubilee's powers. Like, Wolverine, I get it. Mutant healing factor. Cyclops, I get it. He was experimented on, or he was born with, you know, the glowing red eyes. Professor X has mental powers. Jean Grey has flight and telepathy and all this and all that and everything else. Rogue can't touch a single soul. Gambit, you know, lights cards on fire at Vegas. Like, I understand almost everyone's powers except for Jubilee's. They're just, it's sparkly glitter fireworks. She makes vampires sparkle. That's why she's so horrible. She's so horrible.
No, we're not bringing Twilight into this.
No. Jubilee is the Bella of the X-Men universe.
Seriously, let's
look at this, all right? Jubilee is kind of the center kid character of the entire series. After that, I don't know about comics, but in mainstream media like television and cartoons and yada yada yada, at least in the movie universe, she has constantly skipped in the movie universe. Like, they say, oh, Jubilee's gonna be in this film. Whoops, we'll have to wait till next time. Sorry. Like, she's become this giant joke. And the fact that her powers are sparkly fireworks, yeah, she makes vampires sparkle.
Twilighting Jubilee, that's cruel. That's cruel, man.
Jubilee's Twilight.
Dude, that is, dude, that's more abusive than probably what Sabretooth did to Grayson.
So up next, Weapon X lies in videotape. This is basically Wolverine's origin.
Oh yeah,
pretty much, or going back to it, at least, you know, keeping up the whole thing.
I like that they threw in some of the. I like that they threw in a couple of other Weapon X people.
Yeah,
like,
Silver Fox and
I did notice there was a little bit of a name change in the episode, the that robot thingy that attacked them, Talos. I know that in the comics those robots are called Shiva, but I guess it's like Saturday mornings can't name this thing after the goddess of destruction. That's okay. All right, can't name it after a god of destruction. All right, so yeah, let's go with Talos. Does Talos sound cool? Yes? Okay. Let's run with that. And by the way, wow, I don't know about you, but the ending, I find the ending, like, just so heartbreaking.
It is, yes.
It's like, damn it, Wolverine can't catch a break. You know, he hooks up with an ex-girlfriend, she doesn't think it's real, and then it's like, last minute, they're leaving, pan over, and it's like, yeah, it was real. It's like, oh fuck.
Yep.
Damn it.
Wolverine just can't catch a break. Yeah. What is so cool about this specific episode, Wolverine Origin, etc., 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 written by David McDermott and Stephen Melching. I love Steve Melching. He is so awesome. I talked to him a couple of years ago on an interview that we did with him. So cool. In this episode, I just love this episode.
Mm. Yeah. And it's ironic, again, a bit of irony, because Sabretooth is something about... You know, he goes, oh, you mean I could have had the indestructible bones too? You know, talking about how he could have gotten adamantium, and he actually did for a little bit in the comics. You know, I think there was famously an issue of Wolverine where Wolverine goes toe-to-toe with him, and, you know, Wolverine had lost his adamantium. Sabretooth reveals that he has adamantium, and you just got this panel where he just grabs Wolverine by the bone claws, and he's like, you're not even in my league anymore, and just goes snap and breaks them off, you know? And it's just like, holy shit, this has now gotten to like, this is now, oh wow.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Up next, we have the episode. It is time to have yourself a Morlock little Christmas.
Yeah.
Now, I am going to read from previously on X-Men what Eric says about this. He says, "Oh, well, the best laid plans, ... It seemed like a good idea at the time. Sydney at Fox requested a Christmas episode. For most TV series, that could either be a fun idea. Many try it. Looking back, it is clear that a Christmas story idea, both schmaltzy and family quirky, fit best in comedies, not in superhero series about dedicated warriors fighting to make the world a better place. The fact that I took a co-writing credit, in parentheses he says, I rarely do, even on heavily edited scripts where I come up with the story, indicates that this was a troubled episode from the get-go. Please don't blame Larry Parr. It wasn't his idea. If the comments online are any indication, this is the single least liked episode of the series, and I can't blame the fans for saying so. He goes on to say, what elements do I like among the wreckage? Well, for a moment, the idea that Jubilee is a foster child and had never had a real Christmas before. Her first with the X-Men could have been poignant if we handled it better.
It's holiday cheese. It's holiday cheese, and I see what Eric is saying, and it's like Christmas episodes are really hard to do without either just like I'm gonna use an X-Men example and a non-X-Men example.
Okay.
The non-example would be G.I. Joe. They did have a Christmas episode.
They did.
Cobra Claws are coming to town.
Yeah.
But that has like at least a fun little cheese factor that, it's a holiday episode, but, you have like shrunken cobras and stuff like that. That you're, and then you have the thing with Cobra using Joe vehicles and vice versa, that it's forgivable and you're having a good time. Then there's also... The series that came after X-Men the Animated Series, X-Men Evolution, they did have a Christmas episode, but I kind of like the execution on there a little better, in the fact that the whole thing was Cyclops and Rogue, alone in the mansion, and then going out of the mansion and running into Angel, Warren Worthington, who's kind of doing a little OCD about trying to help people and just... kind of being blind to it.
Right.
And then the fact that you have a montage at the end of the episode which showed different X-Men characters celebrating the holidays, and the fact that they remembered that Kitty Pryde is Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, hey kids, there's more to the holidays than Santa, than Santa in the manger scene. So that was cool. It's just, I gotta agree. Christmas episodes, comedy does it best, and you could do it in drama, but I mean, you have to find that balance because you don't want it to be too schmaltzy. Otherwise, it's like, it just ends up as bad holiday cheese, which, I love the cartoon, but, if I'm going to watch any Christmas episodes during the holidays, Morlock Little Christmas is just not, and I don't even, and it's like, I even don't blame the voice of Jubilee for the fact that the line where she's freaking out because Leech is dying, it's over the top, and it's like, I don't even blame her because I'm like, I don't even know how you could do that without, how can you say that without it just, like, there's no way. I don't know, it's like, this was a Kobayashi Maru, and... Honestly,
yes, it
I'm
was.
Not, I'm not mad. I'm not mad at them. If
anything, I'm not mad at them at all.
It's like, I feel sorry. I feel sorry that they had to be put through this.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I'm so sorry.
What is so funny is you mentioned Cobra Claws is coming to town. I'd say 6 years ago, in 2011.
Yeah.
Right as I was starting Tooncast Beyond, whatever we're calling the show now, right as I was starting the evolution from Tooncast Classic, which ended June 1st, 2011, And then later, I started, I think like a month later, I started the Tooncast Beyond version, which is cartoons from 2000 to whenever now is. When I started that part of the podcast, which is still this podcast, even though whatever. So I came up, I went through, I scoured the, like quite literally scoured Wikipedia for every single American, like when I say American cartoon, I mean like Buzz Lightyear, Chippendale Rescue Rangers, G.I. Like every like cartoon we grew up with. I scoured Wikipedia and every single piece of information on the internet I could find, and I came up with 50 podcasts, 2 years of 25 days of Tooncast Christmas, okay? And I came up with 50 cartoons that had Christmas episodes. Now, in both of these things, we've only released one of these. Last year we did 25 days of Tooncast Beyond Christmas 2016. We're going to be doing it again next year with the other 25, but I just couldn't do it this year. But last year, day 8, the 2016 Christmas Action Block featuring Transformers Animated Human Error Parts 1 and 2, Sunbow's G.I. Joe Cobra Claws is Coming to Town, and then the real Ghostbusters, Xmas Hits the Spot.
Oh, wait, is that the one where they go end up back in time?
Uh-huh.
And they accidentally, they accidentally trap the three ghosts, and it's like, Christmas is fucked because you trapped the three ghosts.
Yep. Oh, so wow. I will throw day 8's link into the show notes, folks, if you want to go back and listen to Cobra Claws is Coming to Town. The thing with A Very Merry Morlock Christmas, and this is what I love about I'm only looking at previously on X-Men in the episode order for season 4 at this point, so I have not really dug into the whole book, but just looking at Eric's, the way he's writing this and everything else, at the end of Have Yourself a Morlock Little Christmas is, there is one insider tidbit you can take away from this failed episode. An in-joke about Wolverine disgustedly refusing to sing Jingle Bells after Cyclops butchers the end of another song. In real life, Wolverine voice actor Cal Dodd not only is a professional singer with a fabulous voice, he has a recent Christmas CD out, Sing Along with Santa, check on Amazon, on which Jingle Bells is the first track.
See, I'm getting... you don't watch the Orville, do you?
Nope.
Oh man, because there's a character that's kind of a, there's an alien character that's kind of the Worf of the series, in the sense that the serious alien character, and there was a recent episode that started with the crew singing karaoke, and before there's an interruption by a red alert, it looks like that character is about to sing "My Heart Will Go On."
Oh my god!
Because you get that you get that whole. Everybody is of course cheering because they think this is going to be hilarious. He turns to the audience watching and goes, "You will be silent and listen." And right before the song reaches the crescendo, the red alert goes off and everybody has to leave. And I'm just like, "Oh man, that would have been that I would have loved to have seen that." Hearing, I would now. I want to have Wolverine sings Christmas. I just want to hear that.
Yeah, bub. So the three wise men came.
Absolutely.
And I gotta tell you, if it was me, I would have pulled out the cloths and said, "You're giving me a room. Damn it, we're not sitting there with a bunch of donkeys and camels." The wife's pregnant.
Storm's pregnant.
Jeez. Well, thank you for saying Storm and not Jean.
Well, yeah, because I think it would be more hilarious if Wolverine and Storm had offspring, because that kid would not only be the king of the elements, he would be the king of berserkers with the claw. Imagine a Storm and Wolverine baby, adamantium claws, healing factor, and can control the damn weather.
Man, holy cow.
Absolutely. All right, folks. Last up for season 4, we're going to talk about the big, the epic, Beyond Good and Evil, parts 1 through 4.
This is coming straight from Eric's mouth, or at least his fingers, because he typed this. Yep. But yeah, word of God. Word of God, season 4 was supposed to end with Beyond Good and Evil.
Yes, it was.
So yeah. Word of
God.
It
was actually going to be the series finale until Fox was like, hey, we want more. I know that without even having to read anything, Eric's like, I just know that. So he says here, big story, troubled project. While some fans love this four-parter, perhaps for the every mutant in the kitchen sink approach, nonstop action, and betrayals of betrayals, I don't think we did our best on this one. Since I'm responsible for the stories, this one is on me. Some background. As mentioned in Chapter 12, this was supposed to be the series finale. As such, Sydney at Fox, requested that we go out with a bang, a real battle royale. Our aim was not only to touch base with all the major players from all the past seasons, but to tie up several stories with resulting change in the X-Men. We were going to lose Storm, death or departure, Jean and Scott just married off to have a family, Jubilee and Xavier, Psylocke and a few others, Bishop, Shard, Archangel, were going to join and take their places. We built all our usual personal stories to fit this plan, personal scenes with Storm and Jean and Scott and Psylocke, etc., to set up the big deal changing of the guard in the last scene. As always, we had laced these emotional stories throughout the overarching mega plot involving multiple major villains. Well, most of the way through building this 88-minute story. In the middle of the script stage, one word came down from Fox. They wanted 5 more episodes after these. This would not be the series finale. The composition of the X-Men would not change. Oh, and there's no time to set it aside and come up with something new. Adjust it. So, yeah.
Yeah, it. You know what? Okay, it's an awesome epic storyline.
It is.
It's an awesome, and there's like a lot of Easter eggs among the captured psychic mutants.
Mm-hmm.
I spotted Rachel Summers, and I'm just like, ooh. See, at the time, I didn't know that this was supposed to be the end.
Right.
So I was like, oh, Rachel Summers. Oh shit, Rachel Summers is there. Rachel Summers is there. Oh holy cow! You know, there could be stuff that could be done later. So, you know, and just all the other mutants. The thing, though, okay, one thing that I got to give, I'm going to give them credit for. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to give them credit for, because this was awesome. This was kind of cool, which was, so you had like most of the story. Poor
right.
Poor Bishop is stuck in like limbo or the Axis or something. He's trying to, you know, he's trying to link up with everybody else, and there's this little cosmic janitor type guy who's kind of hanging around with him.
I love that character.
Yeah, no, it's kind of fun watching them go back and forth. What blew my mind, though, is so we have the end of the story. Good has triumphed over evil. Everybody's heading home. The cosmic janitor guy shows up one more time, and then we get the reveal that the entire time he was this character called Immortus. Like, you know, he kind of swirls around. You see a guy with this green outfit, kind of big, weird purple helmet thing, and the cape. And I'm like, oh, shit, it was Immortus all the time! Like, for anybody who's a Marvel fan outside of X-Men, especially the Avengers, Immortus is kind of this really cool... Oh, shit, I don't even know if you could straight up call him a villain, or just like, well, this character who's shown up on and off, who's like, he's connected to the other Avenger villain, Kang the Conqueror.
Mm-hmm.
And in both, like in Immortus' case, he's what Kang may become. Like somewhere in time and space, one of the possible futures, Kang turns into Immortus, and he's basically made kind of like the guardian of a huge segment of time and space, where he just kind of watches over it and tries to, like, guide it, you know, towards particular futures. So having him show up, I'm like, oh, shit. Okay, that now it makes sense. It's like, yeah, we had this fun comic relief character. It turns out to be this more powerful character. I'm guessing he was like, okay, let me just hang out with this Bishop guy. Let's see if I need to jump in. You know, let's see if I need to interfere. Yeah. And then, of course, when the X-Men solve it, it's like, oh, okay, I didn't need to do anything. All right, great.
Yeah.
Good day, man. I didn't have to do shit. Awesome. Yep. So I'm going to go back to my time castle and just chill and be like, yeah, man. Mortis.
I'm gonna go back to my job as a time janitor. That's right. Yeah. What's so funny about this character is the way you're describing him. He reminds me of a combination. Like, he is a combination of Madame Web and the Beyonder from Spider-Man, from the Spider-Man cartoon, because he's outside of time. They are in their own dimensions kind of thing. Like, Beyonder can't be outside their own dimension for too long, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, I mean, having a story that's outside of time, that Bishop is essentially this eternal audience member, and he cannot control events that are happening because he is stuck. And you basically take him out of the story completely. I mean, he's there, obviously, but you take him out of the story completely and then let the rest of the X-Men figure all this shit out.
Yeah.
I think that's great. I think that's wonderful. I think that's amazing. The fact that this technically started as a Bishop Cable story, and it's turned into a Cable story with the X-Men, essentially.
Yeah.
Because Cable is like, Apocalypse! We gotta go back to the beginning of time and destroy... Come to find out Apocalypse is like, I've gone beyond the mortal coil of needing my rejuvenation, yada yada.
Yeah.
Okay, I know Apocalypse probably has been around longer. I could be wrong with this. I'm not looking at anything right now. But Jesus Christ, Apocalypse is the Ra's al Ghul of the Marvel Universe. Like, at least in this version of him, like, that's what I... Like, he has to go back to his rejuvenation chamber. I'm really surprised they didn't call it a Lazarus Pit.
Yeah. Well, I think... I know that Apocalypse has been around since, actually, the 80s.
Oh, okay.
Like, mid-80s. The rejuvenation thing, I think, got... The rejuvenation thing was thrown in the 90s.
Okay.
That's when they started with the whole where he's like a mutant that has been around for super long, and then he needs the rejuvenation chamber and everything. I know that that was a plot point in one like big X-Men crossover called Executioner's Song, where what happened was another X-Men villain, Strife, actually ambushed Apocalypse while he was taking a nap and just beat the living daylights out of him. Because Apocalypse wasn't ready. It was like one of these... It's one of these things in comics where it's like, oh, holy shit. Okay, we know it's real because this guy actually took out Apocalypse. You know, he actually managed to ambush him and really hurt him. It's like, okay, all right. It's all real right now. Holy crap. Right.
Yeah. So, Ra's debut, and it is Ra's al Ghul, people. Batman the Animated Series got it right, damn it. Everybody else is wrong. I'm sorry. It's like we were doing by the time this episode goes out, maybe the top 25. We're currently doing the top 100 villains, and Ra's al Ghul appeared in one of the previous episodes at whatever number it was. I don't remember off the top of my head. And one of the clips that one of the hosts sent me was the Qui-Gon Jinn version of Ra's al Ghul, where they call him Ra's. And I'm like, that's not Ra's al Ghul. David Warner is Ra's al Ghul.
Well,
I mean,
hey,
come on now.
Hey, you know what? Liam Neeson did a good job. I mean, with what he had to work with, he did a good job.
I'll only ever see him as the guy in those Taken movies or Qui-Gon. Like, he is so typecast as Qui-Gon at this point. Like, it's so ingrained in my brain. I can't see him as any other major character ever at this point. And yeah, I know I'm really stubborn in that and whatever else. But yeah, Ra's first debuted June of 71. First appearance was Batman number 232.
Yep.
So Ra's did come kind of before Apocalypse. But still, like...
You know, and actually, while we're talking about what was supposed to be, you know, what Beyond Good and Evil was supposed to be, when reading that, I haven't read the whole thing. I just read like a couple of choice things, you know, in prep for this. Not to mention that, you know, I'll be heading out on my honeymoon soon, and you know, this is a book that I wanted to take with me, you know, especially because I'm heading to like the other side of the country, and that's a long flight. I need stuff to do. Reading that, what I got reminded of is did you ever watch Babylon 5?
Nope, never seen
it. Okay, well, the thing about Babylon 5 is that it, very similar to X-Men, it looked like season 4 was going to be the end. Okay, it was like, that's it, season four, we're done. They had actually filmed the season finale, like the series finale. It was filmed, it was ready to go. Last minute, there was like a last minute reprieve, and they got one more season. So what they did was the finale that they filmed was kind of put away. They did this episode, which if you wanted to treat it as the finale, you could. Mm-hmm. But you didn't have to, because like the whole plot was jumping ahead in time and looking to see how the universe got shaped up by the results of what all the shit that happened in season four. So it's like, if you wanted to treat that as the series finale, you could. You know, they got a last minute reprieve. They did a season five, and then they ended season five with the finale that they had already shot. But in a sense, what they did was the showrunner for Babylon 5, J. Michael Straczynski, he had actually wrapped up pretty much everything that he needed to. Like, he could have ended it season four and you would have had a saga. Hell, he even wrapped up the major part that he needed to wrap up earlier in the season, and then the rest of the season was kind of a little aftermath type thing, because, you know, you had this kind of soft takeover of Earth, and the heroes try to, like, take it back. But, yeah, I found it very similar with X-Men, where we had this episode that could have been it, but then it's like, at the last minute, it's like, no, we want you to keep going. And it's like, oh, okay, so now we got to do stuff to keep it going. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be that. All right.
It's like I told you, and it's like I told Eric and Julia, that I didn't even really know about season five until like 1999, 2000, like right after, I think it was like right after the first X-Men movie came out. No clue. After I saw Beyond Good and Evil, I'm like, okay, great way to wrap up the series. No need for anything else. Yes, when we get to season five in a couple of weeks, when we get to the season five episode here on Tooncast Beyond, yes, that does have old soldiers, and yes, that is an awesome Wolverine Cap episode, because it does have Captain America, but, like,
hell yeah.
For me, everything came to what it needed to be with Beyond Good and Evil. Like, that was the period on this series for me. Would I have liked to have seen more? Yes. And obviously, you know, they only had like five additional ones. But, you know, I don't know. Just, yeah. Alrighty then. So, okay, let's see here. How does the season hold up? This season holds up pretty well. Mm-hmm. I mean,
well, other than a certain young mutant who shall remain nameless, being whiny about the idea of somebody getting killed somebody dying on Christmas.
Yeah, Miss, you know, Twilight Princess over there.
Ow.
Hey.
Ow.
Hey, if I can fit X-Men, Twilight, and The Legend of Zelda all in one reference, yeah, Jubilee. I've broken his brain, folks.
Okay, no, you haven't broken my brain. You make me want, like, you make me want to find a convention or something where Allison Court is a guest. You make me want to drag you to that convention and then just stand in front of her table, just like hold you there and go, apologize. Apologize. Look this woman in the face and say you're sorry.
Nah, it's not her fault.
Still, you're apologizing to her.
Nope.
You're apologizing to her.
Never gonna happen. Never gonna get it, dude.
I'm gonna make it my mission.
Nope.
I'm gonna make it my mission, man. You are gonna do that.
Alright, so did the season keep our interest throughout? Yeah.
Well, let's see. You know, we got the animated version of Age of Apocalypse. We got, we have a time travel epic. We have Psylocke finally making her debut, which made me really happy. So,
Seeing Psylocke was great, because before this, I had only ever really seen her on the cards. Like, I mean, I've seen her in the comics and stuff, but I never actually, at the time, back in the 90s, I wasn't reading comics on a regular like I kind of am these days. And I haven't read Marvel stuff recently. It's been about 3 years since I've read a Marvel book. I need to eventually go back and do some exploring and whatever else, and I'll do that eventually. But like back then, the only time I ever saw Psylocke was on like either the blue team or the gold team trading card thing. Because mm-hmm. the gold team was Storm and the blue team was Cyclops. So,
Well, and those were more, it was kind of a more, the blue team was kind of more about stealth and stuff like that. So, yeah, Psylocke, Gambit, Wolverine, you know, those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you itching to watch the next season now? I'm kind of sad. I'm ready to have a cigarette or something. Like, not that I ever smoke, ever. But it's one of those things where it's like, Beyond Good and Evil was the ultimate climax to this series. It really, really was. So, you know, I don't know. Would you recommend this season of the show to other people? Yeah. I'd recommend five seasons. Yeah. Well,
not to mention the fact that, hey, it's got guest appearance by a couple of characters that are kind of like from the greater Marvel universe. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm one of those that I'm such my comic geekdom. It's like anything that expands the universe, I'm like, bring it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Bring it up. My body's ready. Bring it. Or to quote from Indiana Jones, my soul is prepared. What about yours?
Yeah, exactly. All right, so overall grade based on the GCR Universal Rating System, 0 to 5 stars. What are we going to give it? You can use half points as well.
I'm going to say 4.
I got to go with 5. Mm-hmm. I loved this season. When I watched this back to prepare for this podcast, I think I watched all of these episodes within a day and a half. I just watched them back to back to back. Like, unless I had to go do something, unless I had to leave the house, unless I had to edit a podcast, I was watching season 4, like, all in one shot. Yes, I binged it, and I'm not ashamed of that fact at all.
Did the better half join you, or?
No. She's not into the cartoon. Oh. No. It's okay though.
As long as you get to do your thing, and she's not like, you know, off to the side rolling her eyes and going, him and his cartoons.
I watch most of the stuff that I watch.
Yeah.
That we don't watch together, I watch that when she's at work.
There you go. Okay,
That's not even a problem. So, all right, folks, 4 and a 5 for us for X-Men Season 4, X-Men the Animated Series Season 4. We're going to take a quick break, play some ads and some other stuff, and we'll come back to close the show after this.
I go where I want to go. Out of the way, Gumbo.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
The Powers of Grayskull series will cover every episode of all 4 Masters of the Universe cartoons, Jordan Optimus Solo, and myself, TF2 and Mike, as we tell tales of Eternia, discover the myths of Etheria, become masters in space, and finally masters of Grayskull. We'll have a commentary on the Secret of the Sword film, and a few other special episodes. You can find this 125-episode-long podcast in iTunes and on the web at geekcastradio.com. By the power and honor of Grayskull, we all have the power.
Hurry, Skeletor, hurry!
I am hurrying, I'm hurrying!
I know what we're doing today.
Okay, Michael, if we're going to tackle this podcast thing, we've got to do something really special. It has to be cool, daily, in audio form, and undetectable by radar. Something that screams summer. I know, let's do a Phineas and Ferb review podcast. We'll call it the Podcast Organization Without a Cool Acronym, or PALCA for short. What do you think?
I think if we're not careful, Candace is going to bust us.
You can find PALCA on the GeekCast Radio Network, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and all of the other methods you find podcasts.
Okay, then. Carry on.
All right, folks, we're back here on TuneCast Beyond, episode 79. We're going to close this one out. Any final thoughts from you on X-Men Season 4?
Hey, so far it's like every season it's like, oh yeah, I love this. This comic geek is like so happy.
Absolutely. Yep. If anyone wants to watch X-Men the Animated Series, it is currently on Hulu. It's on DVD somewhere, I think, still, but I think those are out of print. I don't know. Please head on over to the Previously on X-Men website and order that from Jacob Brown.
Oh yeah. Books. No, order it directly.
Absolutely. Directly.
And you know what? And here's the thing, if they order it off Amazon, which I mean, yeah, we're telling you do it directly, but you know, if you want to use Amazon, that's fine. We're not going to hunt you down, but
we will
if you
actually.
Speaking for myself, what's this wee shit from this hobby? Speaking for myself, you know, if you do order it off Amazon, that's okay. Just leave a review. You know, leave a review. Give Eric and Julia some love, because this is an awesome book. This is an awesome book, and we need to tell the world. The world needs to know how cool this is.
Absolutely, we do. All right, that's going to do it for us here on TuneCast Beyond. What do you got coming up? Any kind of projects? I know you're going to be on your honeymoon and all that stuff, but what's going on after that?
As of this recording, I'm heading on my honeymoon within days.
Mm-hmm.
As far as projects, I'm still doing the Keeping It Reels podcast.
Okay.
As of this recording, we're taking a Thanksgiving break, but we got stuff planned. We got some reviews and some things, and hell, you know, we are going to be doing the reviewing the Doctor Who Christmas special when it comes out.
There's going to be another one of those. Okay.
Oh yeah. Oh no. But this one's awesome. This one's awesome because they got David Bradley from Game of Thrones and Harry Potter to play the first Doctor. So it's going to be the 12th Doctor and the first one doing a big team up. But the big news is that end of the episode will feature the 12th Doctor regenerating into the 13th. The first female doctor ever in the history of the show, and you know, people are waiting with bated breath to see how that comes out, because yeah, she, you know, they revealed the costume recently that she's going to be wearing.
Mm-hmm.
We're Whovians everywhere are like, okay, let's see what happens with this. Some people are complaining because, you know, internet, why not?
Mm-hmm.
But others are like looking forward to this. I'm kind of in the latter category. I'm really looking forward to. We won't get anything serious from her until next year. But that first little couple of minute appearance, that's going to be cool.
Very cool. Very cool. All right, folks, that's going to do it for us. Visit the website geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on this and all of our other episode posts. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. If you are in iTunes, please, and if you're on any podcatcher or anything like that, please make sure you're using the TuneCast Classic feed, because that's what we're going back to, because TuneCast is going to be reformatting back to the original. We're pulling a Marvel, folks, or a DC or whatever. Follow us on Twitter at TuneCastBeyond and at GCR and TuneCast are the show Twitters. I am at TFU and Mike. What is your Twitter?
And my Twitter handle, it's pronounced White Balloon King, but it's spelled WHTBLLNKING, because Twitter gave me a character limit. Holes. Because I actually want to spell the whole thing out the way, you know, the way it's supposed to be spelled, but no, character limit. Thanks, guys, because I have to do this now every single bloody time. Thank you so effing much.
Exactly. Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tooncast Beyond and wish you'll join us next time when we will be giving you our thoughts on the Pixar film Inside Out. And Eduardo's better half will be joining us because you guys have some weird... I don't know. You explained this to me. Like, both of you have some weird hatred for this movie or something. What is that story? You told me one story sometime.
She loves the movie. Like the movie. But my hatred is more geared towards the fact that, the creators of the film just really put on some trauma fuel and just emotional baggage. So I'm just like I'm just like, dude, stop making my wife cry. Stop.
You'd think Lewis Black as Anger would make everybody laugh, and it pretty much does.
Oh, it did. It did. We'll cover that in the episode itself. But
yeah, absolutely.
We laugh, but it's like, here's the main, the main human character's childhood imaginary buddy, and now he's in oblivion.
Yep.
It's like, fuck you.
Yeah. We used to like San Francisco until they ruined pizza. It's like,
yep.
All right, for now, I am TFG1 Mike with
Eduardo M. Pryor.
Thank you for listening. Until next time.
You know what I realized? Riley hasn't had lunch. Remember?
Hey, I saw a pizza place down the street. Maybe we could try that.
Pizza sounds delicious.
Pizza?
Yes, pizza.
Right, that's good.
What the heck is that?
Who puts broccoli on pizza?
That's it. I'm done.
Congratulations, San Francisco. You've ruined pizza. First the Hawaiians, and now you.